Mark chapter 12, we'll be looking at the last seven verses of Mark chapter 12, beginning in verse 38. Jesus is stood in the beautiful courtyard surrounding the massive temple in Jerusalem. He taught his disciples and the huge crowds about the people that in that day were the leading religious figures. He told his disciples very simply that these religious leaders were fakes. They were not godly men. They were selfish men who put on a show of religion in hopes of getting rich and famous. He said these men loved to dress in rich clothes. They loved to be praised by the people they met in the streets. They loved to have the most important seats and at banquets and in the synagogues. They loved to pray long prayers so people would notice how spiritual they were. And they used their religion to steal everything from poor widows. Jesus said these men were condemned by God. They were not good men because of their show of religion. They were condemned men because their religion was nothing but a show. They were actors who had turned the worship of God into something like a big movie. God condemned them for their pride and their selfishness. Jesus condemned them for their greed. And these men were so selfish, they were using religion to convince widows in the deepest of poverty to give all of their possessions to these religious men. When Jesus had finished his long warning, he went over to the part of the temple where people brought their offerings. Instead of passing an offering plate like we do, the Jews had rows of tubes that were set up where people could toss in their offerings. They were kind of like a toll booth. You've seen the big funnel. You go by and drop the coin in. And they would come and they would drop the coin and it would fall down into a box. And all the money given was used for the upkeep of the temple and the support of these religious leaders. And as Jesus watched the people giving money, he saw a lot of wealthy people come in who threw in many coins. And they gave the offering, and when they gave the offering, the baskets clanked with the sound of their money falling through. And then Jesus saw one woman coming to bring an offering. She was an older lady, she was a widow. And her husband had died and she survived off the charity of others. And this widow brought to the temple two pennies. She threw in her two little coins, which was all of the money that she had in the world. She came to the temple with those two little coins, threw them in, and then left with nothing. For many, that's a familiar story. But as you hear it today, what do you think of that story? What do you think about the widow? What about the scribes who got rich off women like that widow? Jesus in this account tells the disciples that she gave more than all the wealthy did. They gave out of their leftovers. But they paid their bills, they bought nice clothes, they put food on the table, and they still had plenty remaining. And some of that money that was left, they went and put in the temple offering. This widow had no leftover money. It very well could have been all of the money she had earned that week or that month. It was money that she had, that she was to live on. And she gave it all at the temple. What do we do with this story? What are we to think? Because Jesus doesn't make any specific applications. Let me read the passage. Here, with some of that in our mind, maybe a better picture there in our mind. Let me begin in verse 38. He said unto them in his teaching, in his doctrine, beware of the scribes which love to go in long clothing and love salutations in the marketplaces, and the chief seats in the synagogues, and the uppermost rooms at feast, which devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers, these shall receive greater damnation. And Jesus sat over against the treasury, and beheld how the people cast money into the treasury. And many that were rich cast in much. And there came a certain poor widow, and she threw in two mites, which make a farthing. And he called unto him his disciples and said unto them, Verily I say unto you that this poor widow hath cast more in than all they which have cast into the treasury. For all they did cast in their in of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all that she had, even all her living. It's an interesting account. It's an interesting event that happens here. And Jesus points it out to his disciples. He points out the magnitude of her sacrifice, how much she gave compared to how much she had. He points out the extent of her giving, but he doesn't tell his disciples, at least it's not recorded for us, what they are to learn from this incident. It seems that the conclusion is expected to be obvious to the disciples. Mark and Luke both tell this same story, and it seems that they thought the conclusion was obvious and would be obvious to the reader. Now, if you're familiar with this account at all, if you've heard it used in lessons or in sermons, you probably have heard the most common application, which is that this passage is teaching we should all give sacrificially like this widow gave. And I don't think that was Jesus' point. I don't think Jesus was teaching how to give there. I think what Jesus was doing was making personal the destruction of the scribes' teachings. As he's just said, they robbed widows. They devoured. They left them empty. But it's one thing to say that their teaching robbed widows of all their goods. It's another thing to show it in action. And I think this is what Jesus is doing. He has said the teachings of the scribe is condemned because of its greed, and then he goes and shows that greed at work. Now follow with me. I know for some of you this is, you may have never heard anything like this. I recognize this is a, if you're familiar with this passage, this is a pretty radical departure from what you may have heard previously. And so just follow with me for a few minutes, if you will. Mark chapter 12 and Mark 13 gives us the context of this story. And it puts the story of the widow's mite directly between warnings and promises of judgment. And so, you have two chapters surrounding that are they're not lessons. It's not like the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus has been teaching a series of things, or that one of those other times in the Gospels where Jesus is teaching and he's illustrating with parables or with examples. He has been in the middle of a series of intense confrontations. There's been warnings, and what's coming next in Mark chapter 13 is warning and promise of judgment. And there's in fact Mark 13 is a pretty bleak chapter. It seems very unlikely that Jesus would stop and put a lesson on giving in the middle of a series of condemnations. And so as we go through this, I want to be careful. I recognize I'm making a significant departure, and so I want to be careful in how I do this, but I'm not unmindful of the great voices that have handled this text differently, but I think we need to see this passage in a different light. I think we need to stop and look at it afresh. And so before I get any further ahead of myself, we need to consider the warning first in verses 38 to 40. Jesus says, "Beware of the scribes." Beware of the scribes. It's a needful warning. It's a warning that was very necessary then. I think it's a warning very necessary for us now. And Jesus goes on and describes the scribes in very colorful, vivid detail. And Mark, in three verses, just gives a summary of a much longer warning. Matthew 23 includes that warning. It is long. I think it's something 35, 36 verses. It is harsh. In fact, those words in Matthew 23 are some of the strongest words from Jesus in all of the gospel. He condemns the scribes and the Pharisees soundly. He rebukes them. He said, "Woe unto you." He calls them in that passage a brood of vipers. He calls them painted tombs. It's one of those passages that stands out in the Gospels because of the severity of Jesus' words. And so what we see in Mark 38, 39, and 40 is just the summary. It's kind of the concluding remarks from that longer section. Clearly, Jesus has no use for these ones who are using the worship of God for their own ends. And I think what Mark and Luke both are doing is they're summarizing Jesus' condemnation with the most severe examples of their wickedness. And Mark describes them as men, I think ultimately as pride-filled men, but men who love to wear rich clothing. They love to be dressed in the finest garments. They love to be covered in the clothing of prestige. Those things that would gain them attention because of the importance of their clothes. Not just the well-made tailored clothes, but clothes that show these are important men. They love to wear those kinds of clothes. They love to be greeted in the streets. And not just men that like to meet friends, say hi when they're out and about. The men that love to be recognized wherever they go. Men that love to be pointed out and praised. Men that love the applause of the crowd. They love to be called teacher and master, to be sought after to answer the difficult questions. They love to have the chief seats in the synagogues. They like those seats that were up front. There was a special section of seating that was set apart from the crowd where it was kind of up front and it was off to the side where everybody in the synagogue could see them. And those seats were reserved for those who were teachers, those who were leaders in the synagogue. They were the seats reserved for the important men. And these men loved those seats. They wanted to be seen as the VIPs in the synagogue. And they loved to have the most important seats at feasts. Those chief seats, the uppermost rooms, as it says it there in verse 39, but it's at the feast, and it still occurs somewhat today, but there was the seating was arranged based on importance. So the friend of the host, the closest friend, or the most important person to the host would have a seat on the right hand of the host. And then the kind of the second most important would be on the left hand, and they would go back and forth. And so the closer you were to the host of the feast, the more important you were. And they loved those first seats, those uppermost seats, where everybody could see them, where they were, again, in that position of great, great importance, so that everybody would know these men were important and they were powerful. These were men whose friendship and notice was sought after. And he said they love these things. This is what they do. They want everybody to notice them. He says, beware of them because of their pride, their desire for fame, and they live for the fame. And they were greedy to become rich. Remember, the scribes are the ones who are teaching the people. These are the masters of the law. These are the interpreters of the law. These are the ones that are going about and in public places and in private houses are teaching the Word of God or supposed to be teaching the Word of God, and they're teaching their traditions to people, and they would use their influence to convince people to give up their wealth. And Jesus points out they would use this, but particularly on the, and they would prey on the poor and the needy. They devour widows' houses. Very graphic description. They would consume everything. And these ones, these elderly ones who have no family to care for them, they have no resources on their own. What they own is all they have left, and the scribes use their influence to convince them to give everything, to sign it over to the temple, to give away all of their money. The scribes placed minimal requirements on offerings so that nobody could give less than a certain amount of money. It'd be like if you came in today and we said, we have new rules for the offering. You can't give anything smaller than a $10 bill. That's what they were doing. You have to always give at least this much, even if it was all the person had. And they used their power and their influence over people to coerce them to give to the temple, which on at first glance may sound like a good idea. I mean, certainly the temple needed resources for its upkeep. But what would happen is the money that was given to the temple was then distributed among these scribes. And it went into their pockets. So that they were getting wealthy off these, the sacrifices of those in poverty. And then Jesus says they, for a pretense, make long prayers. They stood where they could be seen and heard. Matthew 6, Christ describes them as standing on street corners. But they would go into the populated places and they would pray long, lengthy prayers so that everybody would know how spiritual and devout they were. They would make this prayer, and it was just a pretense. It was not prayer. It was pious words uttered for notice. And there seems to be a connection. This verse seems to be drawing a connection between their devouring widows' houses and their pretenses of prayers. They use their prayers to manipulate the widows into giving. They may very well have gone to the widows' houses and prayed lengthy prayers to impress the widows. They use their religiousness. I'll use the word piety. They use their show of religion and show of devotion to gain power and importance and riches. These kinds of people are still around. We still see them today, and the warning is, that's why I said this warning is very necessary. Beware of these false teachers. Beware the professional religionists who use their profession of a faith to achieve their own selfish ends. And this may be a politician who claims Christianity for the sake of gaining a block of voters. This may be the televangelist who preaches you must send him seed money and then you'll get wealthy. Whatever it may be, these men are frauds. Anyone who does this is a fraud, preying on the poor, preying on the faithful for their own personal fame and wealth. And after this lengthy, again, we just have a summary of it, a very lengthy denunciation of the scribes, Jesus then goes over to the treasury. It was that portion of the courtyard where there was this row of funnels, basically, of offering baskets, if you will, where people were giving their offerings. And just, again, remind you of some of the historical context. This takes place just a couple days before the Passover feast. This is shortly before Jesus' death. So this is Passover is coming up very, very soon. Jerusalem is filled with hundreds of thousands of extra people. And they, many of these people, this would have been one of the few times of the year they came to the temple. And so they were bringing in their offerings. And so this treasury, this section of the courtyard was probably very crowded. And it says that as Jesus sat over in the treasury, he probably, you know, just found a quiet place against the wall to sit down. And he was watching. He saw the people cast money into the treasury. And many that were rich cast in much. He saw these rich people casting in their handfuls of coins. He's watching, and they're just, again, probably a bit of a din from just the noise of the money clanking down these tubes. But as Jesus watches the rich people casting in their money, he also sees this one widow who gave two small coins. King James calls it a mite. It is the smallest denomination coin in the Roman Empire. We would rightly compare it to a penny today. Its value is a little bit differently, but it is essentially two pennies. So Jesus watches. She comes in and she drops in her last 2 cents. And on seeing this, Jesus called his disciples to him. And he points it out to them. And he makes two specific observations. And he says, the wealthier ones gave out of their abundance. He says in verse 44, all they did cast in of their abundance. It's not that these have scrimped and saved and sacrificed. Really, it is that idea of just, it's the leftover money. It's the money you have at the end of the month that you don't know what to do with, right? We all have that problem. And it really is that idea, though, just these ones have more than they need. And they're just coming and casting in out of that abundance. They just gave a fraction of their wealth. And the widow comes in, and Jesus says she gives much more than a fraction of her wealth. He says she has given more than all they which have cast into the treasury. Because she of her want, out of her poverty, did cast in all that she had, even all her living. It's her livelihood. It very well was the entirety of her pay for, we don't know how much a period of time there, but that was all of her pay. She gave in all of her wealth. It reminds me actually the witticism about the breakfast of bacon and eggs. You probably have heard this. But the chicken, he helps with the meal. The pig devotes all to it. That's what she has done. Just let me think about it a little bit. She has given all. She gave all she had earned. And she came into the temple in deep, deep poverty. And she left in absolute destitution. And strangely enough, at least to my mind, the story ends there. That's it. Nothing else is said about it. The next chapter goes immediately to a discussion about the temple. Luke 21 tells the same account. It ends at the same place. It goes right immediately to the same discussion. Jesus gives absolutely no word of praise. He gives no word of censure or condemnation. It seems impossible for him to condemn one who gave so much, nor is it possible to praise the treachery which coerced this widow to give her last, but no other information is given. No application is made, no principles are drawn, no other references to this event are found in the rest of the New Testament. And we're left a little bit, if I can say, to our own devices, but we're left to ourselves to make application of this passage, which is one reason I think this is a very challenging passage, because we're not told definitively, this is why I'm pointing this out. But at the same time, I think in the context here, there's a point that the authors of the Gospels are assuming this is obvious. I think in Jesus' teaching of his disciples is recognizing I don't need to explain this. There, and so let me remind us, we think through how to apply this. Let me remind you of what a major principle to help understand the Bible. And this is one of the most important ones. Every verse and every passage has to be understood in its context. You've heard me say this before, I know, but the Bible is not a collection of stories and teachings that are just kind of strung loosely together in any order. The teachings of the Bible have a direct relationship to the passages before and after them. We do this with normal speech. We talk, and you know, if you happen to overhear a conversation and you just hear one phrase, you know, there's any number of things that phrase could mean. Any number of ways that phrase could be used. And apart from the context, from the conversation in which it occurs, you don't really know what it means. I mean, you can go through and define the words. You can diagram the sentence. But apart from the context, you don't know what it means. And the same is true in scriptures. There is always a context. There's always a bigger picture than just the verse or the handful of verses that you're looking at. And so as we come to this matter of the widow's offering, it is in the middle of a context. As I've already said, that context is Jesus' confrontation with the scribes and the Pharisees. This comes on the heels of a lengthy, lengthy warning. It comes immediately before, if you were to skip over to chapter 13, and Jesus says in verse 2, "Seest thou these great buildings?" Pointing to this glorious temple. And if you remember a number of weeks ago, we talked about the temple and the magnificence and the beauty of it. It was an impressive and amazing structure. Covered the whole top of this hill. I mean, I think we said it would fill up an area over 40 acres. A large, large facility, beautiful facility. And Jesus says, "See thou these great buildings, there shall not be left one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down." He warns of the coming destruction of the temple. The disciples want to know when this is going to happen. And Jesus moves to begin to talk about the suffering that Israel is going to face, and then moves on from there to talk about his own second coming. And he moves into a really lengthy passage of judgment on the nation of Israel. So we go from teaching or warning and confronting scribes and Pharisees, calling and ending with they received the greater condemnation, the story of the widow, coming destruction and judgment on Israel. In that context there, I have a hard time seeing Jesus looking at her, giving her last two pennies, and seeing her gift as an opportunity to teach to the disciples about generosity and sacrificial giving. As I said, I think something else is going on there. Jesus is condemning the scribes for their pride-filled, self-seeking ways. And as if to prove Jesus' point, along comes this widow on the verge of destitution. She cast in her last two small coins. She cast in all that she has. She has come to this glorious, magnificent temple. A beautiful, rich building that is led and filled with these men of wealth and power and prestige. She comes to this place, poor. But instead of being aided and enriched, she leaves destitute. She leaves worse than she was before. You see the vivid contrast? One who has nothing gives to enlarge the swollen coffers of these wealthy religionists. these professional teachers, if you will. And this is one of the marks, one of the New Testament marks of a false teacher. You read 1 Peter chapter 3 and you read the gospel or the letter from Jude. And both of them indicate this preying on the church, this preying on the faithful, this using the church as a means to get rich is a clear evidence that that person is a false teacher. The message may be spot on, but if he is using that message to get wealthy, promoting his own financial and physical increase, he is a false teacher. It's a sure sign that he's a false prophet. So even though the widow certainly gave sacrificially, I think Jesus is doing something other than teaching us how to give, but he is giving us a warning. He's warning us of these greedy profiteers, these religious charlatans who use their skills for mere hucksterism and the advancement of their own personal greed. And so Jesus says, beware the scribes, beware those who get rich off the church and get rich off the ministry. Beware those who use the Bible as a means to get famous. Beware those who work for influence and control instead of service. And I don't just mean that. Let me back up just a little bit, because it's easiest to pick on those that have nationwide fame. It's easiest to pick on those that you may stumble across while flipping through the channel. But the reality is there are many who, even though they never gain a national influence, who use the church, they use the things of God for their own personal promotion, for their own gain, whether it be financial or whether it be relational. They use it to become important people, to become influential, to become movers and shakers, become prestigious and important, to become ones who the church turns to and says, guide us here. They use it to seek their own promotion and their own gain. And Jesus says, beware. Beware of these ones. And there's also a warning to those that would use religion as a means of personal increase. He says theirs is the greater condemnation, greater damnation. The church and the things of God are not for any individual's importance. They're not for your importance. They're not for my importance. They're not there for you to get some sort of notoriety. They're not there for you to get some sort of influence. And if you view the church as a means of that, you will be condemned. A strong warning here. But I want to conclude. I want to give us a brief contrast. Because I don't know that this is the point of the passage, but it's certainly, I think it's fitting we conclude with the contrast between the scribes and their lies and the promises of Jesus. Jesus did not come to become famous. Rather, we see he set aside his glory to become a servant. He doesn't make false promises and then demand that we purchase them, knowing they can never be fulfilled. He does not demand that his followers do all the work while he reaps all the rewards. Christ has done and is doing all the work. And we are the eternal benefactors. Do you see the contrast? A beautiful contrast. These ones who use religion for their own promotion. And then we have the Son of God who left the throne of glory to become of no reputation, to become a servant, and to go to death. The death of the cross to give us eternal riches. A marvelous work that Christ has done. And these scribes gave a false hope and empty promises to those who would burden themselves with the scribes' tradition. And Jesus gives eternal life to those who trust Him. He asks for all. And He returns our sacrifice with that which is far more valuable. He does not leave His servants destitute, but He gives them an abundance of blessing that cannot be measured by dollars.